Chapter 2. Idris. In the year 51 after, as colonial reckoning went, in the thick of the war, an architect had exited Unspace above the colony world of Amraji. The colonists had begun to evacuate immediately, having seen what happened to Earth 51 years before. By this point, practically every human community across the galaxy was living with flight plans under its collective pillow, a bag packed, and everyone ready to go. On the ground, everyone who'd been able to had boarded every ship there was. Then those ships got the hell off the planet as quickly as possible, fleeing even as the architect's bulk eclipsed half the sky. Some arrived at the nearest colonies, half their passengers traumatized, deranged, even catatonic, because there hadn't been enough suspension beds to put everyone under before entering Unspace. Some arrived with parts of their hull twisted into elaborate streamers and filigree, because they'd come too close to the architect at work. Some never arrived. Every evacuation had its tally of lost vessels. Hurry, panic, untrained navigators, badly repaired gravitic drives. There were so many reasons why. The Gamin had been a mid-sized freighter, fitted out to ship live bodies for the evacuation. Not well enough, as it turned out. It had left Amraji with a crew of 4 and over 700 passengers, headed for the colony of Roshu. It never arrived. A year ago, over 70 years since the Gamin was lost, a Cartography Corps expedition discovered the vessel. Some error in its course had taken it off the known throughways of Unspace, and it had come out into the real so far from home, its weak distress beacon had gone unheard for decades. The cartography expedition that discovered it reported the find, then continued to reach out into unmapped Unspace, seeking new throughways that less adventurous ships might be able to use to reach unknown stars. An antiquated freighter wasn't much use in itself, but it was an important historical artifact. Eventually, the Colonial Heritage Foundation commissioned one of the few independent salvagers with the means to navigate out to where the Gamin could be found. And while the benevolent mission was talked about on all the fashionable media types, the Foundation somehow never got around to mentioning that the name of the salvage craft was the Vulture God, because that might be seen as bad taste. You had to screw your eyes up really hard to make the Vulture God look like any kind of bird. Perhaps a very fat bird, with enormous claws and stubby little wings. The central bulk of its barrel body contained its oversized gravitic drive, which could displace enough mass into Unspace to bring back the Gamma. Projecting out at cross angles were the blunt little wings of its Brachetta drive that would give it purchase on real space and let it manoeuvre. The actual mass drives for fine manoeuvring were almost inconsequential, a handful of vents about the bloat of its hull. Slung notionally underneath, a direction determined by onboard gravity, was the great clenched tangle of its docking arms. The Vulture could latch onto just about anything and haul it around, and now it had reached the Gamma, it was ready for action. Idris was already awake, as always, though having stared Unspace in the eye for the last day, he was feeling washed out and tired. Ready to nap for about 100 years. Not that it was going to happen. He alone had been awake in the deep void, guiding the Vulture God across Unspace. He'd covered vast, empty light years in moments to emerge, a ridiculous distance from anywhere, near where the Gamma had somehow ended up. There was the promised distress beacon, sounding loud and clear. There was the lost freighter, tumbling slowly through space, the beacon its only live system. There had been some suggestion that people might still be in suspension, aboard, But Idris knew cobbled together ships like the Gamma, and they didn't lend themselves to miracles. He made some scratch calculations for an approach and burned some fuel in the mass drives for cheap and dirty momentum. Then he had the Brocator drives reaching out to that liminal layer where unspace and real space met, that quantum foam of transient gravity nodes which their grabby drives could latch onto. The Vulture God sheared sideways through space as its inertia was shifted through 30 degrees, scudding closer towards the distant winking signal that was the Gamma. Idris tutted at his own inelegant piloting and made a few adjustments, spinning the vessel on its axis, stabilizing its drift, grabbing at another handful of the universe to pull them along a slightly different angle of approach. After that, he had the ship's mind reconstitute itself enough to make him a cup of much-needed cafe. Then he set about waking the others. The Vulture God boasted a crew of 7, 5 of whom were human. They made for an odd mix by the standards of ships that stuck to the regular throughways, the readily navigable pathways within unspace that dictated where most vessels could and could not travel. There were no standards for deep void ships, though. There just weren't enough of them. Most species didn't even have a means of navigating off the beaten track, and even where such means existed, they were hard to engineer and needed delicate treatment. Idris certainly felt like he needed treating delicately. He hadn't ever been meant for this. He'd only ever been intended as a living weapon. Long past his use-by date now, Idris was still lurching on like a lot of colonial civilization, most certainly like the Vulture God. He'd been on board for 4 years now, so it was hard not to be sentimental about the ship. It had always come through for them, and never quite broken down beyond repair. And if there was one thing the war had taught colonial humanity to become very, very good at, it was patch repairs on failing starships. Unspace had made him sweat unpleasantly, so by the time the rest of the crew were stirring, he'd blasted his body clean in the dry shower and printed out fresh clothes. This was one of the delights of long-range spaceflight on a shoestring budget. They were basically the same clothes he'd taken off, chewed up and reconstituted as nominally clean. White undershirt, black short-sleeved tunic, grey breeches and sandals made up his outfit. When he cinched his tool belt about his waist, he felt almost ready to deal with the universe at large. His quarters were down near the drone bay, which doubled as engineering control. He could hear Barney complaining loudly within about the list of systems that had developed faults since they set out. Ollie would be prepping the Vulture's claws, ready to clasp to the Gamma, and Medvig would be doing whatever the hell Medvig did when they didn't have anything constructive to contribute. Idris sloped forwards towards the command compartment, where Rollo was going over the initial scans. Rollo Rostand was a stocky, square-faced man, brown-bronzed by decades of low-level radiation exposure, his hair and moustache wispy and dark grey. He had a rare weight-retaining physiology, and the Vulture had been doing well enough to keep his paunch over his belt. He supplemented the standard printed crew clothes with a military surplus jacket he claimed had been his father's, the war hero. The details of these heroics tended to change with the telling, but everyone of that generation had done something. Idris, the actual veteran, was more than happy with Rollo's embellishments because it meant nobody would ask about his truths.
"Well, hola now, my children,"
the man was saying as Idris ducked into the compartment.
"How's it looking across the board?"
"Everything's broken to shit," came Barney's sour voice through their comms. "I am sending you a shopping list for when we're back on Roshu."
"Are you also sending largesse to pay for it?"
And interpreting the pregnant silence as a negative,
In which case, I recommend you make do and mend, like a good son of Earth. Ollie?
One of the drones is a lost cause. The remote specialist's slightly distorted tones came in. She'd slept the unspace flight in her control pod, Idris knew, which was not best operating procedure.
Make do and mend. I know, only it's more making do than mending right now.
Rollo beamed around at Idris, as though this was the best news he could have expected.
We've just matched tumble with our prey, my children. I'm flagging up our access point. Should bring us into the Gamman's crew spaces. Maybe.
Maybe? Idris asked.
When they refitted that bucket for passengers, nobody filed their new plans with the proper authorities, see right? So we do the best we can.
Rollo settled back in his chair and put his bare feet up on the console.
Since you're here, my son, you do the honours, he invited,
and Idris dropped into the pilot's seat. The vulture god was now moving in sync with the gamin, so precisely that they might as well have been stationary. Idris engaged the Brocator drive, nudging the salvage ship ever closer, while maintaining all the other vectors of their travel so that they drifted into the shadow of the freighter like a parasite tentatively approaching its host. This close, he opened up the mass drives as well, trimming their motion carefully as they ghosted across the ugly, weld-scarred hotchpotch of the gamin's hull. The freighter's crew compartment was set midway into one side. Most of the space above it would be for cargo, in this case the passengers, while the gravitic drive formed a lopsided torus around the freighter's circumference. Lopsided because part of it was missing, a section of the ring torn open and warped into strange spiralling fingers that clawed at the void. Rollo shook his head.
Looks like they cut it too fine getting out.
There was no mistaking architect-inflicted damage. Idris couldn't imagine what it had been like for the Gamin's crew. Enter unspace with a damaged drive, or stay and risk the architect's attention. Likely he'd have made the same decision.
Ollie, he transmitted, ready for you. On it.
His board lit up to show she had control of the vulture's claws and was deploying them to bridge the final gap between vessels.
What are we getting besides the beacon? Rollo asked. Kittering, send it over.
Kittering's real name sounded like nails on a chalkboard, made with a rapid stridulation of some of his mouthparts. The crab-like alien would be hunkered down in his own compartment, a space entirely adapted for his physiology and comfort. His chief role was managing accounts and logistics. Still, he was a good second engineer, and when a job was afoot, everybody worked. Even Chris. The last member of the crew, Idris's business partner, hadn't shown yet. She made a habit of taking her sweet time over actually reporting for duty. And if it hadn't been for Idris's value to the venture, Rollo would likely have dumped her somewhere along the way. Idris needed her, though, and the vulture needed Idris to get out into the deep void. Otherwise, it was just one more salvager among many, scrabbling for work along the throughways. Kittering sent over what the vulture's ailing sensor suite had gleaned from the gamma. Aside from the beacon, just some low power readings, a few failing systems still labouring within the otherwise dead ship.
You don't think we'll actually...
The thought of finding working suspension pods bobbed for a moment in Idris's mind.
Find people? Alive? Be the fucking heroes of the universe, eh?
Rollo shook his head.
Go on, though. Bet me 1,000 Halma we'll find them. Bet me 5K largesse. Bet me anything.
I won't, Idris said quietly, and Rollo nodded.
No more would I.
The frantic board showed that they had drifted close enough to set off all their collision alarms, but Ollie had full control of the great convoluted mess of the claw. It was unfolding like a mechanical tarantula from the vulture's underside to grope for the freighter's hull. Ollie was a top-notch remote operator with a rare gift, able to run non-humanoid rigs as though they were her own body. Right now, she would be in the docking claw, its seven articulated limbs stretching and flexing until she had them clamped to the gamma, magnetically locked.
"Nice work, Ollie, my sweet child," Rollo told her. "Smooth as a baby's ass. Now get the cutters ready."
"You're not going to hail them?"
The new voice came from the control compartment's hatch. Idris glanced up and nodded as Chris came in. Here on board ship, she was dressed in a variant of the same printed clothes, though she had one of her signature scarves about her neck, same as always. She was a dark woman, a shade taller than him, her hair a carefully shaped mass of fine curls. She was also running from her own trouble, but getting out of trouble was her speciality skill.
"Nobody to hail,"
Rollo insisted, but a moment later he grudgingly went through the motions. If they cut through the hull and someone fell out and died in space, at least they could hide behind a trail of proper procedure. This was the sort of trouble that Chris specialised in. They could just have hauled the whole ship off like an unopened present to give to the Heritage Foundation. That was all the contract required. Rollo was always on the lookout for a bonus, though. What if the Gamman held some unexpected treasure? What if there really were living refugees? Why give the kudos to the Heritage people when the Vulture's crew could cash in? They could have gone in through a hatch, like civilized people. However, 4 years ago, a fellow salvager had been destroyed by actual honest-to-goodness booby traps left by the long-dead occupants of the ship it had opened up. Trapped in stranded ships, the mind went to strange places, especially if it had been exposed to unspace for long. The crew of the Vulture God were taking no chances, and going in through the wall instead, Ollie cut smoothly along some of the pre-existing repair seams until the side of the freighter had been peeled back. There was no rush of stale atmosphere, only vacuum meeting vacuum.
"Could have been worse," Idris allowed.
"Right then, let's get this business underway," Rollo announced. "Ollie, move your remotes in and have Medvig follow up with his little fellows. And you, shyster," he said to Chris, "may as well get a camera drone in there. The mediotypes will be worth something. Double time, everybody, and that does not mean double pay, before anyone asks."
The crew spaces of the Gamma were adrift with small objects. Back in the earliest days of space travel, nobody would have dared fit out a ship with so much loose junk. But people had been taking artificial gravity for granted for generations before the architect came to Amraji. It was a small side use of the same engines that moved the ships through space. The Gamma's gravitic drives were lifeless, though. The view feed from Ollie's drones showed her remotes jetting carefully through a swirl of odd items. Data clips, slates, gloves, a gleaming silver locket, a stiffly frozen plush toy. Of the crew themselves, there was no sign, and Idris wondered if they had taken a shuttle and tried to get... where? Emerging unplanned from unspace in the middle of nowhere, drive burnt out, and the nearest star system light years away, where would you go?
"Atmosphere loss by slow leak, my guess," Ollie's glitching voice came to them. "Or this junk could be flushed out already. Moving towards the cargo."
"Check if there's pressure before each door," came Chris's input, following up with her cameras.
"My hands are in the carcass," announced Medvig, with that tinny edge of jollity that always tinged their artificial voice, no matter what the topic. Like many hivers, they had accumulated a lopsided personality
the longer they were separate from the wider hive mind of the assembly. Idris slouched down to the bay, feeling that even if he wasn't doing anything, he should at least be where the doing was done. Towards the ceiling, Ollie hung in her pod, eyes closed, as her three remotes cleared the way for Medvig inside the wreck. She was a pale, doughy woman, grown bulky through inactivity, even on a spacefarer's diet. Half obscured in her pod, the most obvious thing about her silhouette was her stunted, near-useless limbs. Her arms ended at the elbows, with a tuft of half-formed fingers. One leg stopped at the smooth stump of her knee, the other absent altogether. Olian Timo, Ollie, had been born so, and without any sense of proprioconception, a stranger in her truncated body. But she'd been born to a colony where every single human being was a precious resource, and they'd found where she excelled. Ollie had trained with remotes of all kinds since she was three. Her mind could mould itself to any body shape, regardless of how its limbs and senses were configured. Three remotes at once was just another day at work for her. The crew had set up an umbilical, leading the 3 meters or so between hulls. It led down to the Vulture's crew, though its direction was meaningless to the dead spaces of the Gamma. Medvig's armless tripod frame was already squatting at the Vulture end, a metal assemblage of dull bronze and copper, their cylindrical body dominated by 4 square openings. Their long head was featureless, save for a couple of mismatched yellow lights. Humans like to have something to focus on. Medvig's hands could act as his own personal remotes, and he had already sent these small spider-like assemblages down the pipe and into the freighter to help Ollie with the fine work. Chris gave Idris a wave from where she sat on the floor, Kittering crouching beside her. The alien wasn't much more than a meter high, but was half again as wide, lending him a crab-like gait when he moved through their human-designed corridors. High-status Hanalambra back home might lavishly ornament their armoured backs and the shield-like surfaces of their protective arms to show their wealth and status. Kitterings were set with cheap screens that he used to communicate or rented out as advertising space. "Suspension pods," said Ollie. Idris glanced up to the bay's main screen, flicking from one drone feed to another. Here was the main cargo space of the Gamma, lined with suspension beds. Their irregular layout and lack of uniformity spoke of the haste of their installation. None of the drones were picking up any power signatures. "Could be worse," Chris said, and he could only nod.
"It will, of course, become worse," Medvig's cheery tones issued from their metal torso.
"Next cargo bay, I'm opening her up," Ollie reported, and then, "It's worse."
Idris stared dully at the screen, noting that the conversion of the Gamma from cargo to passenger craft hadn't been complete by the time of its evacuation. That hadn't stopped its crew from nobly taking on as many people as they could. There were no suspension pods in the next chamber, just bodies. They were vacuum-withered, dried up like sticks, many with ruptured eyes and self-inflicted wounds. A few desiccated hands clutched makeshift weapons. Idris watched a gun drift past, an old model accelerator that could certainly have put a pellet through the hull. Perhaps that had lost them their atmosphere. The Vulture's drones pushed in through the open hatch, sending rigid bodies spinning away. It looked as though there had been a couple of hundred people packed into this hold, and they had not gone peacefully. Idris could almost hear an echo across time of the dreadful, all-consuming panic that had swept through the hold like a flash fire, the madness gifted to each one of them alone.
it wouldn't have just been the knowledge that they were going to die. People could be remarkably sanguine when all hope was gone. It was that they had gone through unspace, awake. It was something he himself was intimately familiar with, but then he was an intermediary. It was what he had not only been trained for, but extensively engineered for. One of the lucky ones who'd survived the process. Unspace travel while awake wasn't a death sentence. It wasn't guaranteed to drive a person into a stage of permanent madness either, but both outcomes were entirely possible. Unspace was different. Things from real space, such as humans, had a tenuous existence there. It was a terrible, lonely place, until you sensed something other. Then, being alone became preferable to the alternative. Regular navigators retired to their suspension beds after setting a course along the throughways, and their ships woke them when they were ready to exit unspace at their destination. It was only when you went off the beaten track that someone had to keep the lamps burning, gazing into the abyss and having it gaze right back. That was what intermediaries did. That was the invaluable service people like Idris provided to the post-war world, for as long as their minds held together. Things went further downhill after Ollie found the Gamin's lone power signature, the one system still working in the whole ship. She tracked it down to one corner of the hold, finding an antique media-type projector bolted lopsidedly to the wall. It was looping through an array of entertainment, brightly coloured figures that were partway between human and extinct Earth animals. They were still capering about, having adventures, teaching vacuum-silent lessons about space safety and friendship and making do, because someone had wanted the children to have something to take their minds off the journey when they left their homes and went into space. Because, of course, there had been children here. Because, of course. After enough time had passed, Rollo's rough voice came through to them.
All right, my sons and daughters. Ollie, Medvig, bring in anything loose that'll fetch a price. Then let's get this tomb back to Roshu. Soonest started, soonest finished. And Barney? What now?
The engineer demanded, from wherever he was in the ship.
Run some component comparisons. I know she's old, but there's probably something on that ship that we could reuse on this one.